Hi, I'm Sally Kirkman from sallykirkman.com, and I am here today with Christina Rodenbeck from the oxfordastrologer.com, and we're here to do an Astrology Talk Investigate, our little short podcast that run alongside our main monthly podcast on astrology. And today we're going to look at opposite star signs. The title of this little episode is Do Opposites Attract? I mean, people, you know, it's do opposites attract in star signs, in life, and that's what we're going to be looking at. What do we think, Christina? Any first ideas on that?
Well, in typical fashion, I'm going to say yes and no. Yes and no. Do they attract? Are they complementary or are they rivals? And, you know, both can be true. I had a little look around before we did this episode just to see if there was a sun sign statistics thing, and not really, right? I have to say, from my experience, certain opposite sun signs or signs work better together than other opposites. And I find that quite interesting. So, for example, I have come across quite a lot of Taurus Scorpio's combinations in life, and And it's important when you're thinking about the opposites to think of what is that axis, right? So it's an axis across the zodiac. And what is the Taurus Scorpio axis? If you were going to say that in one word, what would that be? Would it be, what would you say, Sally? You're a Scorpio.
Well, I can't say it in one word, actually. I mean, it's, you know, the Taurus Scorpio axis for me, it's about Taurus is fertility and growth, and Scorpio is decay and transformation. I've said it in four. But it is, that's the axis of it. And I mean, I think it's such an interesting axis, isn't it? Because Taurus in the Northern Hemisphere, it's springtime, April, May, everything's flourishing, abundant. Scorpio is October, November, and things are dying away for that compost, that rich compost to kind of mulch in and new growth come from that. So you could say that the Taurus-Scorpio axis is about life, death, rebirth, renewal. It's got that feel to it. And I agree. I think it's a really powerful opposition. And it is one you often find, actually. I know friends and clients, Taurus-Scorpios, they work well together. I just want to say one other thing for me on an opposition, and then I'll let you go, Christina, is just that, you know, with an opposition, is this, we need the opposite sign. You know, in whether you're in a relationship with someone or not, or in your own life, it's important to look at that, what the opposite sign represents, because you can learn from it and they work together as a pair.
And also you can fall into the opposite sign's behavior or fall into that. So it's really important that this concept of projection is really important when you're thinking about opposites. Another opposition that is really interesting. See, I would summarize the Taurus-Scorpio one as passionate. It's passionate, in all senses. Another one that I think is interesting, but less cohesive in a way. So Taurus and Scorpio can really work well together. So that's a fixed opposition, right? These are two fixed signs. And then the other one I was thinking of was Pisces Virgo, right? This is one where you can find them falling into each other, right? So Pisces is, they're very different signs, right? Virgo is earthy and mutable. Pisces is watery and mutable. And Pisces is all about expansion and having no boundaries, right? Virgo is all about focus and precision. And sometimes that can be very nitpicking. So you can get this sort of complaining. They can bond through complaining, the Virgo-Pisces thing. This kind of negativity can come in. And it's really interesting whether you're going to get those oppositions, because just maybe within your own chart, whether you can get those oppositions working positively or negatively?
I don't know so many couples, Virgo Pisces, actually. I have to say, I can't really think of any personally. It'd be interesting for people to let us know if you're in a relationship, Virgo Pisces. I think it's a trickier combination. You know, again, it's one of these interesting ones, isn't it? Because you can get Virgos who are completely messy and Pisces who are very organized. I mean, it's, you know, it's sort of, so you are working with that opposite sign, bringing these, you know, bringing the two together. So it's a very different kind of affair, different influence going on, and really, really different energies, actually, Virgo and Pisces.
And I think you've made a really good point on that tidiness versus messiness thing. So you'd expect the Pisces to be the messy one and the Virgo to be the tidy one. And this is not true, you know, and you'd expect Pisces to be the one who can't do detail or critique. And it's not true. And it's because there's something about that mirroring that's going on. So this is an axis, and it's an axis that's partly about perfection, right? It's perfecting things. And one is perfecting maybe earthy things, and one is perfecting on a kind of more spiritual level. Maybe that's not quite the right word, but invisibly. You know, and so there's a certain, and for me, that is like perfection and completion is something about that Virgo Pisces axis. And they need to learn to complete. Both of those signs need to learn to finish things off.
It's interesting what you're saying. Beauty, they're both seeking beauty, aren't they, in some level, whether it's a perfectionist craft way or, you know, Pisces in a more kind of ethereal way, actually. You don't look so convinced on that, Christina.
No, I agree. I am really convinced. I wouldn't call it necessarily beauty. I would call, except that there is beauty in perfection. You know, there is beauty in something being just right, just so. So it might be cooking, you know, or whatever it is. And that's what that axis is about. It's about reaching the perfect point of something and then allowing it to letting it go. This is mutable signs, you know, you reach this point of perfection, then you let it go.
Yeah. And for you being a Pisces, you kind of, you know, it's probably having a better understanding of that. I mean, if we leap onto another opposition, I mean, Aries Libra, which were, you know, it's a really Aries ascendant myself. So very aware of this axis. And we're in this powerful eclipse cycle at the moment of Aries Libra. And it's such a, you know, it's such a classic one, or an easy one to get your head around, isn't it? Because Aries is me, 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 all about the self. Libra is, well, what do you think? What's your side of the opinion? And, you know, it's all compromise and relating. So it's the self and relating axis. You know, and Aries need to often learn to listen. They often need to learn to compromise, let the other person go first, the other person lead. And Libra sometimes needs a bit of that Aries oomph. Just do it. Crack on and do it. So you can see the sort of how they work well together. And I think I have seen quite a few Aries Libra couples actually as well. I think it's one that, you know, those star signs work quite well together. They do attract one another.
And this is a cardinal combination. So this is like they're the first of the season. Both of those. So that, you know, one thing that you can get with Aries Libra is a struggle for who's on top, you know. And I have to say, again, this is, think about the, what is this axis about? It's about, it's about self and other. It's also about arguing, about battling things out. And I find that Librans can be incredibly argumentative, Libra sun sign. When they take a side, you know, this is why you find them in courtrooms, as the advocates, you know, when they advocate something, or even, you know, in a conversation, they might play the devil's advocate quite often. And that's interesting because they're switching into Aries mode. And that's something that can happen with your opposite sign. That's a sun sign. And it's quite useful if you know your chart to, like, if you're struggling with your, I don't know, with your Mercury in Pisces, or your Mercury in Aries, think about how it would act in the opposite sign, to switch into that opposite sign and see things from a totally opposite point of view can be really useful.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, definitely. So let's think about who else have we got? We've got Cancer Gemini. Capricorn.
Ooh, oh, you okay, want Cancer Capricorn? Yeah.
Let's do Cancer Capricorn.
William and Kate.
Yes, they are, aren't they? I mean, and, you know, this axis is all about home tradition, isn't it? It's that really classic axis of traditionally Cancer is the home lover, the family-oriented, and Capricorn is kind of the, you know, out at work, going for it, rising, empire builder, all of that. But it's this very traditional, they both often have a love of history. They, you know, they have a love of kind of status, doing things right, both cardinal signs. But, you know, you can't just fall into that. The Cancer just is the stay at home, the Capricorn goes out to work, can you? I mean, you've got to, again, you're working with this opposite and you need to find the balance between the two.
I found a lot of Cancerians who run their own business and create this sort of family. Cancer Capricorn is also mommy and daddy. So, you know, mommy is supposedly Cancer and daddy is supposedly Capricorn, although we all know that is a completely sexist astrological stereotype. But there is, it is the parental axis, and that is how I would, what I would call that one is it's parental. It's about parents, and it's like how you balance that parenting, that responsibility. And you can end up with that, again, with that axis, with Cancer being the baby and Capricorn being the parent, and then that flipping around back and forth. So often if you get those, you know, relationships between Cancer and Capricorn, it's like, who's the parent with that? Who's and who's the child, you know? Or who's much younger sometimes?
Yeah, it can be a parental influence, can't it? Or, you know, it's often probably important to think about the role model of your own parents as well, and whether you're seeking like a parent in the partner. It's that kind of feel to it. But I also think for me, they both appreciate kind of doing things right, comfort, status. There's that, you know, they're often on track to do things traditionally when that comes to family and home and work and all of that. I mean, and again, would be interesting to really see whether we've got William and Kate as our classic example, but to see in real life how that works out, be interesting.
Because I don't know that many Cancer Capricorn couples in real life.
I don't.
I know a few, and actually an age gap can be really helpful with that, because, you know, it just works that you actually are comfortable in those kind of different roles. In the parental child role. Finally, let's get to that Gemini Sagittarius mad combo.
Not finally, we've got another one after that. But anyway, let's do Gemini Sagittarius. Brangelina was Gemini Sagittarius. When I thought of who the classic one is, Brad Pitt, Sagittarius, Angelina Jolie, Gemini, didn't work out too well for them in the end, but it's adventure, isn't it? It's kind of exciting one. Both leaping into life in a way, both ruled by like Mercury, the communication planet, Jupiter, the adventure planet. So they need adventure in life. They need excitement. They need things going on, bounce ideas off one another. Often very social, I think, this combination. You know, it's not just about the couple, the relationship. It's about the rest of life as well and being engaged with all that's going on, the Gemini Sagittarius. Could be a hoot, actually, I would have thought, that combination. Great fun.
I think it sounds fun. I do think that it's interesting that you bring up Brangelina because, of course, they were in the public eye so relentlessly, you know, and that is this is a publicity axis, because it's all about communications, right? So you have, and it's also, you brought up like the ruling planet, which is important to think about. So the ruling planet of Sagittarius is this expansive Jupiter, which is about publishing. It's the planet of publishing, broadcasting. sharing information. And Gemini is ruled by Mercury, which is the planet of storytelling, gathering information, though. It's like a journalistic. So you have the journalistics Gemini and the publishing Sagittarian. I mean, together they should really be starting a publishing company, shouldn't they? Gemini Sagittarius or running a magazine or running an empire of, you do see it, Sagittarius, a lot in the charts of entrepreneurs and publishing people.
Yeah, it doesn't feel quite so romantic, does it? It's not, it doesn't feel like it's about that. It almost feels like they need something to be doing together, more, you know, for a partnership to be actively engaged in. And that's what can bring the relationship alive. It feels more like it's got to be a meeting of minds or meeting of values, beliefs, the Gemini Sagittarius axis.
Yeah, definitely. Well, these are two signs that love to talk, right? And they love ideas. And that's what they have in common. You know, they should be, or they could be running a course together, you know, teaching together. And the only problem is that, you know, and I think this is why it might not work so well as a kind of romantic relationship, is that, you know, Sagittarius could be a know-it-all, and so can Gemini be a know-it-all. It's like, who knows more? I got to tell you more about this thing. So they could end up quite annoying each other, I think, irritating each other.
It'd be great to hear from people, wouldn't it? You know, if you're in a Gemini-Sagittarius relationship, let us know. How does it work?
Yeah, fun but irritating, perhaps.
Yeah.
And also that's another mutable combination, like the Pisces-Virgo one.
So we've got one more, Leo-Aquarius, fixed, like the Taurus-Scorpio. Interesting one, Leo-Aquarius. Again, I can't think of that many couples with it. It's almost Leo's the royal sign. It almost feels like the royal and the commoner. That sounds awful, but it does, Leo Aquarius, in a way.
I don't mind. I'm a commoner. I'm going to own that.
Okay.
I have Leo rising and Venus in Aquarius, so I have a little bit of that opposition in me, which is special, not special, you know? And both of those signs are special, not special. They can learn a lot from each other. Actually, I think this is an incredibly useful combination to have. But again, I think Aquarians can find Leos really kind of annoying, actually, because it's the light, you know, coming out of Leos, and the sort of charisma and all that can be kind of,
yeah, they can sort of overdazzle Aquarius sometimes, can't they? And I think the other thing for me with Leo in relationships is they want to be adored. They want to be acknowledged and complimented and told that they're the best. I mean, Leo ruled by the sun and everything else revolves around it. And will Aquarius do that? I'm not sure. You know, perhaps not. So it's not an obvious one, is it, to work well together? There probably needs to be something else in the mix.
Well, you know what they work well at is work. I think they work well together on a team or in a committee. These are two signs that are very much about sort of social organizing. You know, Leo can be really creative and inspiring, and Aquarius can figure out how to organize stuff. And you get those two working on a committee together, it's going to go places. Things are going to happen. It's going to work. And also I noticed that quite a lot of stars are Aquarians. You know, they're getting that Leo, somehow they reflect the light back well for people. You know, I'm thinking of, say, Jennifer Aniston, speaking of Brangelina, the one that got away, Brad, why did you do that? but, you know, what a star, right?
Yeah.
And that she's the Aquarian star. She's every woman. And yet somehow a magnetic star.
Yeah, agreed. It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, then, you know, if we're going to kind of sum up, do opposites attract sometimes, but it's more about opposites need one another and what they can learn from one another. That's the really interesting point of this star sign axis, isn't it? The axis.
Absolutely. And it's important to look at it in your own chart in multiple ways. You probably have oppositions in your own chart. And the oppositions that you have in your own chart give you strength, dynamism, resilience, an ability. You know, they are really cool to have in a chart. Not, you don't want your whole chart to be a giant opposition, because that's going to be tricky. But it gives you alternatives. you know, so you're not just stuck in one way of doing things, you know, and you're not stuck in one modality, you know. So with the oppositions, well, actually, you are in one modality. With the oppositions, they're always in the same. So they're always either mutable, cardinal, fixed, like that. But they're always different elements. So you're getting two different elements working together. And it's always these. So it's always water and earth or fire and air with oppositions. So you get the fiery, airy oppositions, which can be very exciting and exhilarating. And then these earthy, watery ones, which are not that. But they are emotional and actually practical. So the earth opposition for the watery person can stop the watery person just floating off into, or for the watery side of your own nature from wandering off, going all floaty and emotional. And then you earth it. And vice versa, for the earth, you stop becoming overly material with that watery emotion. And what do you think about the fire and air combination, Sal? That's your across your axis.
Well, I mean, the fire blazes bright, doesn't it? So it brings the air signs sort of out into the world, actually. Or it encourages them to let themselves, you know, the air signs are often about the network, the collective, and the fire signs say, no, who are you? What are your gifts? What are your talents? Where can you shine bright in life?
I think that's absolutely accurate. It's perfect.
And then the other way around, what do the air signs? I mean, the air signs remind the fire signs that it's not just about ego and self. And there's a world out there as well, maybe. I mean, that's one way of looking at it, isn't it? So it's an interesting, there's, I mean, I find with, you know, the oppositions are fascinating. And like you say, it's good to have an opposition in your chart because it gives you grit, determination, something to get hold of. And you can look at them in these different ways to get a good understanding of them and how you can work with them. And that's such a key aspect of these oppositions. It's like, how can you bring them together? How can they complement one another? So you've got something that works rather than going back and forth.
A very common combination of things that you see in people's charts is the T-square. So you have the opposition and then you've got a planet somewhere halfway in between. So you've got the T-square or you've got the other square, whatever that other angle is, where you have planets that are in trine and sextile to the opposition. And those are also the places that you can look to, how do I get oppositions in my own chart working? Well, I look at what's either at a 90 degree angle, a 60 degree angle, or 120 degree angle to that, and have a look at what's there. And also just, so say you have like the Leo Aquarius opposition in your chart. We'll also look at the other fixed signs. Look at Taurus and Scorpio and see what's happening there.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, there's you can sort of take it out further, can't you, looking at it? But even just looking at the opposite sign itself, you can learn so much from you know, the opposite end of the axis. I think we should wrap up there, don't you, on the opposites? Thanks for listening in. Do opposites attract? Let us know. Are you in an opposite star sign relationship? Take care and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye-bye.